Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to our rather irregular Tuesday show.
Hello.
We are back. We are back.
I'm sorry to all the little people inside our computer. I understand you're very hungry and we've not fed you in a while. We hope you're all okay.
It's like you've got had a Tamagotchi. You've not been able to,
You left it at your grand's for 2 weeks or something. Gutted.
Well, to be fair, we always seem to come back at the most opportune time.
We have come back at the most opportune time because, for those interested, today spring has sprung.
It's finally spring,
There's
yes.
this yellow thing, there's blue
The
in the
sun's out.
sky, there's the little midges are out, you saw a bee earlier on,
I
and the ice
did.
cream van was out in the street.
I
So,
saw a bee. You
we're
know it.
back.
We're back. I saw a bee and we're back. We've stopped seeing our own shadow, and it is no more 3 more weeks of winter. 3 more weeks of incessant rain. The incessant rain has gone away. And that concludes the weather report section of this stream. For those of you who've not been here before or might have forgotten, the best way you can support us is directly through YouTube because we are still fully monetized somehow. So Super Chat, Super Stickers. The Ko-fi in the link there. I will also make sure that is in the chat very quickly.
But if you wish to support us alternatively, you can subscribe to the Substack, where this should be posted as a podcast without adverts and stuff. But Substack's shit the bed a little bit, so. Oh, excuse me, that will come in time.
We're still
But you
trying
can
to repair the
also,
Substack, I'm afraid, yes.
buy book, more importantly.
Well, I've not abandoned the Substack. I need to get it back up as a backup thing because their video thing's just not been working for me. But also, we've been writing. Spoiler alert, we have been trying to write the second book. and I'm going to hand you a bunch of stuff for that at some point. But it's, yeah, a lot of our writing work and our written work we've been putting out is being put into a very long, cohesive, much more cohesive
How can I write the
format.
book? I forgot how to grab a pencil.
All right. Evelyn forgot her pencil, but. This
Has
is,
anyone got a sharpener?
yes, but you can, speaking of which, you can buy book over at Whifflin's Publishing. We still sell book, people still buy book. You have missed out on sale on book, but book is still available. So
Book is just as valuable, even though it's still not on sale.
well it is well it's still on sale, it's just not on sale.
Yes.
English is a great language and we like it very much. By book. But for those of you not aware of it, I'm pretty sure the Big Tent is something that people are familiar with as a political concept, but it's also something that's talked about in patches and spaces and invoked, m much like the Overton window, in a way that is a political trick.
Yes. I mean, is this big tent actually in the room with us now?
Yes. Is the Big Tent in the room with us right now? I know the little people in our computer are in the room with us right now.
Down
Hello.
below.
But we don't know if this tent is in the room with us right now. The Big Tent is a concept, and it is something that pretty much everyone in politics at some point or another will push. There is always this push, and our detractors, our many haters, in
It
quotes.
normally comes with this one phrase. Come
Yes.
on, guys, let's drop these silly divisions and get behind a movement that really matters.
Yes.
And lo and behold, you end up with a wide variety of characters who are people whose opinions and principles cannot be reconciled with one another. And the big tent normally tends to collapse in on itself, leaving many people embarrassed and wishing they'd never gone.
Well, yes, but that is a process that people cannot really see in the moment. There's these great divisions, like what's happening currently with the Iran situation, that allows you to see the unviability of the Big Tent, of the Grand Alliance, of the I don't know, if it was a video game, they'd be going for the wider audience. It is just that. It is the idea that you must maintain a broad coalition in order to be successful. Whereas if you're trying to be an insurgent movement, a vanguard movement, as we've talked about, what you want is an inversion of this.
Yes.
And we will take you through in slightly painstaking detail how the Big Tent doesn't function. But first of all, let's have a look currently who is in the Big Tent, because the Big Tent seems to have expanded recently, because the Big Tent is issue based. It is a concept. It's It's based on the fact that there are shared issues between groups that should be able to alliance together, in quotes. That's one of the ways that people sell it. And every time we have a new issue come up, in quotes, it has to have the litmus test of who in the tent thinks what about the issue.
Yes, another thing happens, and we must we must create a census around the tent for who agrees with what.
But let's have a good snapshot here of who is in the big tent of Let's Bomb Iran. It's a very big tent, and you don't want to be in it.
No.
But by attaching yourself to any of the people who even associate with anybody who's in it, you end up being pipelined. We'll explain this. We'll get the crayon drawings out again.
Slop osmosis.
The big tent really is just a way of removing gatekeeping. Anyone who tells you you need to create a wider coalition and not alienate people with different beliefs is laughing at you. They are putting the clown shoes and the rainbow wig on, and they are laughing at you.
I will say, I think specifically on this regard, the whole Iran thing that's happened over the course of the weekend actually goes above and beyond the big tent.
Yes.
But I think what we want to do through this event particularly is illustrate to people why maintaining associations with people who fundamentally disagree with you on issues as important as this stuff cannot viably work as a compromise that benefits you.
No. It's also just, this is a great demonstration of hegemony. We talk about hegemony a lot. One of my favorite phrases is just, hegemony means hegemony. Mm. What did you think hegemony meant? What did you think a totalizing power structure meant? What did you think the fact that these were contiguous structures was like in practice? It's very keep calm, remember your training, but whenever someone tries to put you in the big tent, what they're really trying to do is staple you to the agendas of power.
Well, I mean, I think the example we could use with this, specifically in the sort of regard we'd be looking at it, is the number of people who have run around going, isn't it shameful that Keir Starmer didn't just instantly latch onto the operation with the Americans? An operation we now understand the Americans were reluctant to go into themselves briefly. However,
but also,
that's our problem. And Starmer's a bad man because he didn't want to go to war with Iran immediately, which is probably a lie anyway, because I doubt it's up to him to make a decision on that regard.
Yes.
But what it then allowed people to do on our side of things was point to us and go, well, you don't agree with him, do you? Because that would make you a smelly leftist Starmer supporter if you didn't like war in Iran and regime change.
Well, it's a very clever trick, because what we have here is the fact that they are actually in the tent with Keir Starmer. The big tent is, we should strike Iran. The reluctant partner routine of Labour stretches credulity, especially as Brits are currently being deliberately put in, like, and performatively put in harm's way, in quotes, to make you feel like you're involved.
Yes, and I think that's an important aspect of this. A lot of this, we need to consider who exists and whose sort of sphere of information and what field of information are you operating on? Who else is on it and what are they distributing across it? And that this is primarily something to initiate a psychological effect. It is the same with the performative failure of Rishi Sunak being unable to stop the boats.
Yes.
It wasn't that he was not able to stop the boats, it's that he didn't bother trying. It's not that Keir Starmer can't resist Trump and the need to join NATO operations or whatever else, it's that he was just never going to do it in the first place.
No.
But it's a lot more effective to pretend he was going to.
It's in a very effective way, and the debate here really is about action or more action. The conversation in the tent, in quotes, is about whether the action should have been undertaken enthusiastically or reluctantly. And that is the tone of the debate here. But here we have Labour, no disagreement, really. It was a disagreement of process, and even then it is a performative one to try and defend their position, because their position really is untenable. The whims of power do not cater to the electoral, political mood of the nation. Power does what it wants. And so Labour here has to be in the tent, but pretend it doesn't want to be. And that really is its position as... The thing is, tacitly, of all the positions we'll look at here of people who are braying, theirs is on paper the most quote-unquote anti-war. And you have this rigidly enforced, hilarious idea of the political spectrum where you Labour can come out and claim some anti-war credibility for even just making mildly reluctant noises.
Mm.
But who else? Well, who else is in the Big Ten? Well, of course, the Tory party is. Here we see, oh God, fucking Jeremy Hunt. Jeremy Hunt, of all people. I thought he'd gone away. America is questioning our loyalty, and we're going to be suffering far more than the US economy. We should have all been in with the president, says Jeremy Hunt, as he explains the issue with Keir Starmer's failure of leadership on Iran.
How many of these people giving out this sort of, we should have all been in with President Trump, were never Trumpers like 3 or 4 years ago?
This, again, is the, it's the utility of the tent. If anything about Keir Starmer or the Labour government appeals to you, you are going to be on board with the, you are more likely to be on board with the Iran strikes, because they are, even reluctantly. And so we have here the Tory party, which has some legacy appeal, but really, it's just default neocon cutout talking points. They are now irrelevant apart from the fact that outside of their little, you know, two middle class and center boomer bubble, the 18 to, you know, 15 to 18% boomer inertia of people who are possibly brain dead, they have no relevance.
Yes. And I think to get on to the sort of next, the next diaspora of tent dwellers that we have here, I think is more directly relevant to the conversation that we are in.
There we are, the tent diaspora.
I think I do want to stipulate, I understand what you're trying to say, but I wouldn't actually turn around and say that bombing Iran is a big tent thing. I think the big tent thing is more a conversation about the disparate groups of supporters behind something.
Yes.
And that there's quite a few back here. You've...
there's I clicked on completely the wrong one. There it is.
There we go. So there you go. There's the line from the American sort of magosphere that we've seen so many times about Britain becoming Britain's going to become an Islamic republic because Keir Starmer's some weak, pathetic guy that can't gee up his Muslim voters. But yet, this is also the same line that's been used to attack Farage and this, that, and the
but
next.
Tommy's
thing.
Still in the tent with Keir Starmer. He's in the "we should strike Iran" tent.
No, I just don't think the way we're using the terminology "big tent" later on in this actually applies to what we're looking at here. Whereas with Tommy Robinson, it does, because he is more adjacent to Restore and other things that people are starting to get themselves involved in.
Well, that's the point. He's also adjacent to Tory figures. He's also adjacent to Labour figures because he is calling for this action to intensify. He is part of the debate. And whether or not you acknowledge it, he is part of the "we should bomb Iran" big tent. You have Starmer allowing the military bases to be used, and you have Tommy coming out and say, make him more available.
No, I understand that. No, I'm agreeing with the narrative portion there.
But the interesting thing here is that we have this structure that springs into action. You see that when it comes time for the chips to be down, in quotes, all of the parts of the establishment that are meant to appeal to everyone apart from basically students and Muslims, i.e. the Green Party, the designated little retard zone that they inhabit, all of the mechanisms of state, whether quote-unquote dissident or not, that are allowed in the conversation, are all rhythmically saying, in varying flavours, that bombing Iran is the correct decision. There's some equivocation how it should have been done, but the equivocation is not about the idea of the bombing itself. But the Tommy Robinson here is an interesting one, because he, again, is somebody who has been continuously attempted to be pipelined into our sphere. I remember a particularly ugly episode last year where somebody tried to ambush him into talking at a Tommy Robinson rally.
You're talking about Rupert Lowe here.
Someone tried to ambush Rupert Lowe about talking at a Tommy Robinson rally. And the problem is that there are a lot of people who will 80% of the time talk indistinguishable from someone you might think as quote-unquote base. We talked about this earlier, the base is over thing.
Mm.
But the other 20% of the time, they are repeating the Tommy Tards.
Yes.
They are repeating Tommy Robinson. And if that person is giving people quote-unquote red pills, but then turns around and goes, actually, we should be bombing Iran harder, all that's done is that is the thin end of someone else's wedge in practice. We've had that quite a lot. We won't get the thin end of someone else's wedge in there again. I think people understand that quite well. We'll probably also bring it up again at some point.
But if you're not a Tommy supporter because you've decided you're a slightly different shade of blue,
yes,
you can be a Reform supporter, wherein now that they've adopted a number of members of the Tory party directly, they are now hook, line and sinker online with everything geopolitics-wise that America wants us to do, as Nigel Farage has been a face of for years, if not best part of a decade at this point.
Well, it's also we talked about the whole neo-neocon things before as well. This is a great example of Reform just falling in line behind the US narrative, which is the hilarious pretense of this being a defensive war.
Yes.
Nobody, even the BBC and all of the quote-unquote mainstream media outlets, none of them has gone in the direction that Ukraine war did, in that they went the 300% justified route.
Mm.
The Ukraine war exists in the Kosovo narrative. And Iran exists really in the Iraq war narrative. They are saying that this is a bad thing, that this is a war of aggression, but you are just going to have to deal with it. And also maybe the outcomes of this war of aggression will be quote-unquote good and liberal.
Mm.
And that is the conversation being had when it comes to the more neutral and parts of the media structure. But when you get Reform here, they are presented with an opportunity to do the same, actually. If they want to be milquetoast, they could do the same equivocating as the BBC does, but they have placed themselves in a far more pro-neocon war position than the BBC, which is how the BBC is able to look, quote-unquote, reasonable in its outcomes.
And I think this is where you can start to see the big tent that they're painting.
Yes.
We're all upstanding right-wing patriots in this big tent here, so yes, we all support this war. It is that attempt to associate all these disparate groups to this.
Well, there's also the point that if you look at the other big tent issues in quotes, the spectrum here is more sympathetic to Muslims to less sympathetic to Muslims. There is a separate big tent of we should be sympathetic to Muslims and we should not be sympathetic to Muslims. There's all of these different narrative operations that people seem to think of themselves as on the side of.
Mm.
You get somebody who might mentally think of themselves as part of several different big tents, how our politics has become.
I mean, I suppose this is, you could just as aptly use gang and counter-gang as we have described from Frank Kitson's stuff to really describe what we're talking about as tents here.
Yes.
These are places where you can either be put directly or through process of elimination by not fitting in anywhere else put in, and but therefore sort of classified and universalised.
The problem is that the bottom-up language, the language we are taught to think about democracy and governance, in quotes, through, is that you have to create a political alliance. That you have to build bridges and you have to build, working relationships with all these different groups to get anything done. But in fact, the opposite is true.
Mm.
If these groups, every time, turn around and do this, you cannot have a working relationship, as we'll talk about, I'm preempting it, but you cannot have a working relationship with these people. But the instinct is always to try and coalition build. Every time someone acquiesces in a small part of an issue, like the trans issue or economics or any of that, every time someone agrees with you, every time you gain a friend, in quotes, it is pressure to play nice with that group of people, to build your electoral coalition and your big tent. Because the only way you win is your tent being bigger than the other person's tent.
Mm.
And that is democracy. And the process here, all alliance building does with any group like this is make you stapled to the worst excesses of an agenda that is anathema to what you're trying to represent. It makes you unable to be counter-regime in any sense, because you are still stable to it. So go on, Evelyn.
I thought we were just...
We're gonna get through these.
I'll keep skipping some of the links you've got up here, so...
Oh, sorry. Very small ones. There it is. We've also got Richard Tice here. Talking about the fact that the betrayal of Britain in favour of begging for votes. He's quoting Dan Hodges, who was himself a Daily Mail columnist, talking about the betrayal of Starmer and trying to appeal to the traitorous Polanski.
Polanski now runs our foreign policy.
You've sided with the Mullahs. Your side, it is this, it's people like, how could you fall for it? How could people fall for the Iraq war? This is how. Allowing this to be anywhere near them because they don't like Troons, because they think the economics and that the government needs to be downsized. And then you end up in a room with all the people who want to vaporize your children and other people's children. That's how this process works. But that's the narrative crafting here of you are betraying the side. You are betraying, as with Tommy Robinson here, the counter-jihad. There's a large double duty here we'll get to later, but there's even more examples. Let's keep going. Here's Richard Tice speaking at a proud to support the real Persian people in Whitehall against the terrible Iranian regime, ashamed of our Starmer and Labour government abandoning US and Israel. And the imagery just kind of manufactures itself.
We are the coalition that is the West. We must spread democracy everywhere and other such taglines of nonsense.
And other such stuff, yes. These are all evolving, but what the narrative is here really is that it's once again suffer for the on the home front.
Yes,
it is. We are fighting the Muslims abroad, so we can fight them here. It's this idea that because Reform and Tommy are quote unquote counter Islam, we must suffer in our homes because they are helping Islam be fought abroad.
Yeah, the issue of Islam must be conquered on two fronts, at yes. home and abroad, yes.
It really is just freeze for Israel here, though. As Marco Rubio so readily admitted, this is a war of Israeli making.
What I think the phrase you're looking for here is to us physically paying higher prices as a consequence of acts that are taken on in this war, presuming this is going to be the case, acts as a sort of propaganda of the deed.
Yes.
So you physically have had to make that sacrifice. You've had no choice around it. And ergo, it really makes that choice, or lack of choice, cemented in your own psyche. It yes. makes this event appear more real than it otherwise was. Had they not ramped gas prices up by turning ships away and letting the Americans bomb one of the major gas pipelines, the Ukraine conflict would have been a lot less real to a lot of people, irrespective of whether or not they supported or were against it.
A lot of this,
what it did,
yes.
more importantly, was give you that element of narrative and reality and these sort of different talking points that kept certain things beyond questioning.
It is about making it real in people's minds. The same thing with sending the ships there, putting people in harm's way, talking about Cyprus. All of these things to try and bring it home to people that they are in some sort of existential conflict and try and activate in them that, well, we have to beat enemy. Enemy here, enemy attack, we attack enemy bad. That is the short circuit here. But I honestly don't think it really has, apart from the policy sphere and the loud propaganda sphere, this is very performative.
I concern myself with the fact that I think a lot of this is priming.
Yes.
And that people who I've seen already do this are directly drawing the line that we're going to show in a minute,
yes.
are doing so too early and are jumping the gun.
Yes.
You want to let people connect the dots for you because it makes them more real to them if they've got, oh, that's why.
Yes. Good old-fashioned home front. Okay.
But yes, I think we could get right into this now. I think this is the most egregious example of this and is coming exactly from one Henry Jackson Society's Alan Mendoza, who is now the foreign policy advisor or global affairs advisor, whatever his official title is, for the Reform Party. He is putting forward the narrative that now that we've dealt with the Ayatollah and we still have to deal with the threat of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and whatever else, that we need to concern ourselves with the fact that there are militant Iranian sleeper cells here in Britain. And this is just to get you constantly to think about and associate the problem of unorganised acts of foreign violence in Britain as being in some way associated with, or possibly even to be blamed upon, foreign regimes like the Ayatollahs.
Yes.
And I mean, he's saying it more clearly here. I've seen other posts on Twitter of accounts that have a bit of the 77th to them that I would say have done exactly the same thing. But really, I think the key here is to make you do that. They want you to sit there and think, well, actually, bombing large parts of the Middle East and destabilizing those regions for the benefits of Zionism is justifiable because brown people are angry on our streets.
It is an act of trying to make you see this as vengeance. We'll go into this with the more alternative media because the quote-unquote alternative media has been doing this relentlessly because of what they pipeline, what they represent, and what they staple together. But yes, here we see Alan Mendoza, who is an employee of the security state. He is. He is. There's so many different layers of him being a spook, it's difficult to list. Just Journalism, the Henry Jackson Society's involvement with Prevent, the Henry Jackson Society getting £80,000 from the Home Office, the Henry Jackson Society's involvement with the Institute for Statecraft that was described directly as described its employees directly as part of intelligence clusters, Alan Mendoza's lobby work on behalf of Israel with various Friends of Israel organizations, the fact that he's married to somebody who claims right of return to Israel. All of that stuff paints a very clear picture of who you are in the big tent with. But many people swear off it now, but I remember a lot of you fell for reform. I'm sorry, but even a lot of you who think you are alternative influencers, in quotes, and think you are really up on this, at first, really badly fell for it. Oh, Farage is back. He's going to do something. Ooh, do you want to go door knocking for reform? Oh, it's going to be based. It's actually going to be based this time. Don't worry.
This was all you were ever going to get.
Yeah.
You were never going to get anything other than this.
And now you've got Sueller fucking Braverman. You've got foreigners sat there telling you that you need to go and die for Israel again.
I mean, we'll reiterate this a number of times throughout what we're going to look at towards the end of this stream, but there is obviously the problem that we are being, as people put it, demographically replaced in Britain. This is a civilizational level crisis that we are going to have to contend with. Solving that problem, as far as I'm concerned, is in no way, shape, or form unique to Islam or dealing with Islam itself. It's almost to suggest, in a certain regard, that when the left go on about the Islamophobia nonsense, they sort of almost have a point insofar as the fact that people just blame Islam for what is the fact that foreign people aren't like us. The incompatibility of people from Lesotho or the Philippines or wherever else is as much of a problem of that, not really a problem of the fact that people worship some helter-skeltered bloody quasi-pagan ideology from the desert in the Middle East. That just happens to be another factor in the midst that is not the critical issue.
Oh dear.
Because the big tent exists and there is this constant sort of field of information, you may not like reform, you might be a restore head, you might reject reform for all its weaknesses, but you are still engaging with the information environment that's constructed by people like Alan Mendoza.
David Atherton, somebody who was pushed as quote-unquote a based person you should follow by many people.
But and what we end up with is these people...
Spooks. Yeah. You end up with spooks for Israel.
I was going to say, what you really end up with is people who otherwise should be able to think independently and for themselves, saying, oh, well, we can justify this attack because as far as MI5 said, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard was planning attacks in Britain that have been foiled.
Yes.
So because MI5 says that, then, yeah, I suppose we can sort of just ignore the fact that this is happening.
Well, this is something we talked about, for years. This is from January this year, but the stream itself is from 2023 when we talked about the neo-neocons, as we are referring to this crop people. Nigel Farage is a pipeline, a conduit for the Americanization of British politics. And the Iran strike, the fact that we are once again in an Iraq war paradigm, where we are taking part in another neocon attempt at regime change from the sky, which... I'm not going to go. I cut out the Libya stuff here because I already made that Tragedy of Libya stream. If you want to know about what happened in Libya, go watch our Tragedy of Libya stream. But this has all happened before, and we've all been relentlessly told to forget about Libya.
Well, this has also become what our culture is. We no longer have a discussion about whether or not we should be involved in these military actions. What we have is videos of Katie Hopkins running around on Twitter basically acting like a shock jock radio presenter calling Keir Starmer a queer because he likes Arabs.
Well, yeah.
She might as well be Bill O'Reilly from 25 years ago during the bloody Bush era.
What are you, a friend of the Muslims?
Yeah.
Are you betraying America for the Muslims?
It's all... This is why we warned about the Freedom Fries returning. This is why we spent... Odd.
How does Freedom Fries taste now?
It's almost, I'd say for nearly 4 years, we tried to warn people that this was the paradigm that was coming. Mm. Very precise. I know we're a little bit smug about those things sometimes, but we did call this. If you go back and look at our work, it's not like we're going, ha-ha, we called this. No, our body of work has been relentless, mostly to the cries and shrieks of the very online right, that this would not happen.
Yep.
That this could not happen. And that this was impossible, that we were blackpilling.
I mean, this is also in the midst of, what was her name, some ambassador for something under the Trump administration who came over and said, yes, all these new populist parties in Britain and Europe will be supported by basically a new equivalent of US aid that creates a legacy of MAGA in Europe for the existing future. What, like the fucking Gladio network? I mean, you thought you were going to make America great again, and you did. Do you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Was it worth it?
And all of this has been, again, all of this has been stapled to the AFD, any nationalist, in quotes, movement in Europe that even dipped its toe in using MAGA as a model now looks ridiculous.
The people, whoever is involved in whatever level of stuff at Restore is going to have to operate with extreme discrimination against this stuff. The moment you have, you know, Restore Britain Great Again or some shit like that, it's over. Go home. Give up. Don't actually have to live with the guilt of the fact that you had to give this thing your time and your energy. You really don't. You're not under obligation to be involved in the big tent.
No, that's why we tell people that they are under no obligation to be involved in politics. Because 90% of the time they end up in some ridiculous, nonsensical coalition they can't see the blind spots.
Here I am in the big tent, and ooh, I ended up with pie all over my face. Yes, because you're watching clowns at the fucking circus.
Well, let's move on to one of the other aspects of Le Big Tent. Le Big Tent also includes MAGA, who very obviously think that, well, actually maybe not, who are also playing the reluctant partner routine. We have the US slightly to certain audiences. In fact, they've said everything. They've basically made they're like a Bigfoot it away from have said everything.
We were the spearhead for this, but we were also reluctant to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
We were the spearhead. We
planned this for 3 months, but also we were forced into it by Israel's insistence on striking. It is Marco Rubio just coming out and saying that if Israel struck Iran, Iran would strike back in the region in a way that would eviscerate America out of the Middle East.
Mm.
That's what this is an admission of. And I don't know how things are going to end, but they're certainly not ending well for buildings in Tel Aviv.
I mean, this is also a further question that can be put forward as well, of course, which is to what extent is, especially when it comes from neoconservatives, critical commentary of Israel actually a critical comment, particularly on maybe necessarily Benjamin Netanyahu and his mob, more than it is actually Zionism and the political project of Greater Israel itself.
Thank you for the £5 there, Ellie1. Cheers for all you do. Thank you. And thank you for the $5 there, Yiz. The big tent is cancer. I'm an American, and I hate America. All of the Americans and proud white should hate this machine. It's evil.
You too can help burn down the big tent by donating as little as £1 a month so we can buy more lighters and try and burn the tent down.
No. We need it for Theakston's. And we use the lighters mostly for jaunty cigars. We promise.
I'm coming to burn down your fucking tent.
Well, the thing we've got on screen here is just like Marco Rubio being like, we got forced to attack Iran by our masters Israel.
Yeah.
He actually just fucking said it.
I think there's another one from J.D. Vance here as well.
Yeah.
President Trump will not get the United States into a years-long conflict with no clear objective. He's already put out the mission accomplished banner. But then this is the same man who's trying to sound reasonable here that then runs around on press conferences talking about how Britain's going to become the first radical Islamic public with nuclear weapons. It's like, how can you put forward someone who is supposed to be the second in command of the most powerful empire this planet's ever seen, and then he's stating things that are that fucking retarded? I mean, the biggest evidence of the fact that the entirety of Western governance is almost universally overseen by Jewish interest groups is the fact that we spend so much of our time involved in a national conversation talking about Islam and nothing else.
No, we end up stuck talking about Islam and absolutely nothing else. Well, there's also the problem of the alternative media, in quotes. I'll actually just skip that one. It's a little bit about the fact that they are having to rob Peter to pay Paul with the whole missile situation. But that's the little... a little in the military autism weeds here. We're looking at stuff that is narrative. So from Unheard, The Spiked, the Living Marxism, The Spectator, and The Telegraph, we have the right-wing press, in quotes, from alternative ends to mainstream end, moving in unison, telling people that this is a good thing.
Lockstep, dare I say.
Lockstep for endless war. I know a lot of people are sitting there thinking those things, these examples don't apply to them, and that they are immune to it. But the problem is that most of your quote-unquote based influences, here's Jack Hadfield, who was again pushed as somebody who was le-based. I apparently have 45 followers in common with this person.
Director of Destination Dover, GB News documentaries, reporting from live courts about the grooming gangs. But then this is the same person that's running around giving apologetics for why what Trump did in the Middle East is good.
And then shrieking at people who tell him to fuck off, Tory boy.
So think once again, when you're out there sincerely engaging in some sort of interest group or pressure group about something at the grooming gangs, which is admirable. Yes. I can understand why people want to do that and want to go through something like that to change the situation so that doesn't happen again. You should remember that all the people that are the public face of this are going to turn around and call you an anti-Semite when you start to become too effective and start asking the wrong questions.
Also, about 90% of Operation Raise the Colours has come out and gone, yeah, let's bomb Iran. This is why we don't play well with others. Months ago, if we told Jack Hadfield, basically, fuck off Tory boy, a few people, oh, you can't be Jack's base, you have to be nice to him.
He's getting our message out to the rest of the people.
This is why we don't be nice to the people that you think are based, because you're wrong, because you're fucking wrong. I'm sorry, but the opinions that people have and their taste in commentators is terrible. This is why we're cantankerous. This is why we don't play well with others, because this is what other people look like.
I just want to read that sentence there. I'm not against war. I'm against wars that we can't win. We do for stupid ideological reasons like spreading democracy and aren't in our realist foreign policy interests, Israel. We have to get over the mind virus that is total anti-intervention sentiment. What a way to take what is a subset of questions you should really be asking about this and just completely muddy them. I mean, this individual now, really in a certain way, has, I hope, in the eyes of many people who have followed his work for otherwise good reasons, lost respect. You should have. But the only problem is, something else will happen next week. You'll be the first live reporter on the scene, and no one will care. No one cares the fact that Charlie Peters is out doing court reports for this, that, and the next thing, but during October 7th, and he was in a car park in fucking Tel Aviv reporting live during the shelling. Yeah, cool, whatever.
Again, this is why we tell people to go away. And that we are not for them, and to go consume something that's more their speed because of this. Because we are constantly told the Jack Hadfields of this world are people that we need to work with, and they absolutely, positively, demonstrably are not. I will not get in the big tent with fucking Jack, we need to get over the anti-interventionist mind virus Hatfield. Absolutely not. Well, also here we have someone who's a Guardian staffer. I left my tweet up there because it is, it's hegemony means hegemony, but here we see it. Here's the Guardian. Women and girls. Even the loony lefties get their slice of the narrative pie.
Well, that is, of course, one of the through lines that we get across the entirety of the liberal spectrum of politics now, is the humanitarian aspects to this. It's an issue about women and girls. It's an issue about misogyny. It's an issue about civil rights and freedom of speech, freedom of association, and the ability to dress like a prostitute if you want to.
Well, the problem with GB News is that grooming gang reports are mixed in with Zionist bloodlust for endless war against Muslims in the Middle East. They sully one with the latter and connect the two together, so anger at grooming gangs is misdirected towards bombing Iran. This is how you can be the thin end of someone else's wedge. This also, in the minds of many people, discredits the narrative of the grooming gangs. A lot of people don't believe in the grooming gangs because all they see is the same people who put forward the narrative that this happened are also screaming at them, actually foaming at the mouth about defending Tel Aviv and bombing Tehran in a way that is so revolting that they run at full pace away from anything to do with the grooming gangs. Mm. It makes the grooming gangs look like a Zionist conspiracy theory cooked up by bloodlusting neocons. And that's the way it looks to many on the left, because that's the way that all this alternative media makes it look. And every time you amplify some wet reform person about the grooming gangs or any counter jihad, and then they turn around and talk about how we need to bomb Iran, you have functioned as the thin end of someone else's wedge. Cut that. I don't care if they're saying what you like at whatever precise moment they're doing it. Cut these people out ruthlessly. Do not amplify them. Do not look at them. Do not talk to anyone who talks to them. Throw bile on anyone who would even consider them as a viable political option. That is the only way that you can escape the big tent. Mm. It's like being a horse. If you're in politics, yeah, politics is like being a horse. If you wake up and there's a tent over you, something's gone really wrong.
At least the horse gets a little bit of privacy in the tent.
And here's the same narrative sold from a quote-unquote rightward direction. Sophie Cochran, who for some reason looks like a 40-year-old, 12-year-old girl, is very grateful for the same reason the Guardian writer is, that these people are being vaporized so that women and girls can wear shorts.
You had fucking Charlie Downs from Restore Britain on Twitter going, well, you know, I don't think we should fight this foreign war, but I am sympathetic with the people of Iran. It's like,
drop the quote-unquote nuance.
Yeah.
Drop the toe in the big tent. Turn around and scream at these people for being the ghouls that they are. We know what happens here. We've had Afghanistan, we've had Iraq, we've had Syria, we've had Libya. How many more examples do you want? Do not equivocate over endless war. And anyone you see equivocating over endless war, spit on them.
Mm.
That is the only reason you can burn down the big tent. And again, all of these narratives are pipelined into our midst.
Yeah.
Who told you that Iran was planning sleeper cells in the Britain? MI5 did. The same MI5 that classes you as a terrorist.
The same MI5 that spends millions of pounds every year actually trying to instigate Muslims into committing terror attacks so that their narrative remains coherent. Because the thing that is unspoken with so much of this is that Muslims in Britain, what majority of them there are for the most part fucking harmless. I'm not saying you've got to like them. I'm not saying you've got to think they're a good thing.
That is the life.
Here, but what they aren't is a combative organized force.
No.
And pretending that they are is actually preventing us from really engaging in the problem at hand.
The Muslim community in Britain is so disorganized and fractured that they get hoovered up by parties like the Green Party, who are actually the like comedy troon party. The Islamists are put in a big tent with the comedy troons and then they cancel each other out.
Yeah.
That's how that works. They have their own big tent operation. It's called the Green Party and it completely neutralizes local Islamism in this country.
But this is how it comes full circle. there are a lot of people who will say, I don't want to listen to Tommy. I don't like all these other people. I disregard everything that's said in the mainstream media. But because there's a consensus operation to make you understand that being anti these foreign wars is smelly and leftist, what you end up doing is reversely sort of
being angry at Muslims in the abstract,
fighting a rear guard action and justifying the very action you should be against.
It's just that being angry with Muslims in the abstract doesn't do anything. Well done, you're angry with Muslims. Do you feel better?
It's like being angry at the Troons, being angry at the gays, it's like being angry at the women. It's like it doesn't matter.
It's like being angry at the fucking sky. How do you not understand that these people are not a force to be reckoned with in this country?
I mean, I loved the other one the other day, them doing a big hoo-ha, some of the Restore folk, about their plan to try and recriminalise abortion. How about you actually excise the pro-abortion movement in Britain by signing a sort of decree that says you'll never speak at a Battle of Ideas event organised by the Ferretti family ever again, because Anne Ferretti's a disgusting representative of illegal late-stage abortions across Europe. Why not make a stance against her instead of just being angry at abortions in the abstract?
Hey, yes. God. Well, again, we're back here. We're back at the idea of the accidental theory of politics.
And this is, yes, I think this is something we wanted to push in this as well.
Yes.
As a lot of the people who are reluctant, that are critical, still adopt managerial priors. You've got all these people going, no, we shouldn't be in Iran. That's going to mean we're going to have more migrants here. Why? Explain to me how that means we have to have migrants here. Or is it because you've done so long living in a Blairite managerial sort of paradigm that you instantly assume that imperial actions abroad must equate to more foreigners coming here?
The wars don't actually cause the immigration. That's the wars do not cause immigration. These are two separate things. Our government goes out there and bombs people, and then it invests immense resources in bringing them here. Have you noticed that Syria isn't next to Europe? But it takes immense resources and coddling and actually, you know, Angela Merkel actually sending out like representatives and finding caravans to bring into Germany. That wasn't a natural process. The idea that migration just happens because of wars is a completely false narrative. I think that it's a shorthand that people do because under the Judeo-American regime, under the Judeo-American Empire, the wars that it causes are used as harvesting spots for refugees, in quotes, and migrants. But that's not a natural process. It causes the wars as an excuse to harvest the people.
Who just come from anywhere else.
Yes.
But I think that there's something to be said for the fact that why would you, as someone who, for a lot of people, what they do on Twitter, their primary problem is migration and ergo re-migration.
Well,
why would you approach the conversation of some other issue by first turning, well, don't use this as an excuse to bring more people here. Well, now that you've said it, we might as well. You know, it's that you've almost seeded the ground by saying that this has to come with it. Well, that we have to fight this being part of it. It's like, no, why don't you just fundamentally demand an answer to the question of how does war over there bring people here?
Well, it's a trick. What happens is, as well, with the whole Big Tent approach, is that reform comes in and says, well, we're for attacking Iran, but we will actively resist the natural immigration that comes from it. They are also portraying immigration as this natural force. And even then, they've not done that. Reformers actually said, oh, well, we owe the people of Iran a debt. So they are very much on board with this, but it's not like they have to go out there and stop it. Iranian refugees are not something you have to stop. In fact, Iranian refugees are something that would actively have to be brought here by a great effort. So those who talk about stopping migration are having a false narrative. It's not stopping migration. It's ceasing the active production of migration. Migration is not a natural force. But the large problem, sorry, the largest problem with the Big Tent is the fact that those within it have irreconcilable differences.
Yes. You cannot be politically connected to anyone who does not condemn the strikes on Iran. And that's an explicit condemnation. No apologetics, no ceding the ground, no accepting any points of that whatsoever. and you have to do it in the strongest terms.
Yes.
It has to be impossible for all the groups defending the mechanism of decline to be in coalition with those trying to halt it. There are
irreconcilable differences
between the groups make up the Big Tent. We've seen this. The whole Restore thing for the last week and a half has been about, is it philo-Semitic? Is it anti-Semitic? Is it Sevenat? Is it Ethnat? If they'd have started out with something that they could actually gatekeep and they could actually say, look, there are these people that are involved in this, everyone else, what they say about it means nothing and should be ignored, they wouldn't even have to debate whether or not they're Sevenat or Ethnat. They just go, we're this, and there's no discussion. Because what you have by having Le-based poster, these sort of mediums, these sort of open gateways for slop to flow in and out of through the clown jewets.
If anyone that you associate with, platform or amplify, has even a toe in this big tent that we've described, flirts with anything from MAGA to reform, even slightly, that person should be ejected.
Yes.
Because that makes you useless. They have a clown shoe on you and a clown shoe in the big tent. And all that people see when the chips are down and when it becomes time for the actual revulsion for these events to take hold, like what happened with Iraq, there's always this period afterwards where the revulsion comes out, and some of that revulsion will be aimed at you. Because people will go, well, weren't you pally with people who were pally with these people? Why can't we remove pro-Iran war propaganda from our midst?
Yes.
Existing
in a big tent also leads to an endless conversation within said tent. All time and political energy is spent trying to reconcile these irreconcilable differences just in order to maintain the tent itself. Never mind actually directing it towards action.
We have to have a viable political coalition. We have to endlessly debate these things that should be settled. No, we can't eject everyone that doesn't agree with us. That makes us electorally unviable. You're already dead. This naturally results in enforcement of the liberal compromise, in which the aggregate will of those within the big tent is taken up by a group, usually with official backing. The problem is that the irreconcilable differences on race, identity, economics, religion, ethics, and mere goals of those in the big tent cancel each other out, and so compromise between them results in nothing. The trick, we've gone through the trick of the neocon frame, but that is another good, the best Restore could hope for in its wildest dreams, really, is a coalition. Like, let's actually, I don't want to put the completely poop on everyone's...
You got that up.
Yeah. I don't want to completely poop on everyone's parade here. No, I enjoy that, but yeah, you have to keep the clown shoes off you.
Well, I was going to say, we are not going to say that this is going to, for a fact, happen.
No.
But if it is going to go anywhere, this whole mechanism of just being co-opted for someone else's regime has to be snubbed out. That might mean, for what some people are involved in, and in terms of Restore, that they actually turn around and completely redefine it as a different project. Drop the bottom-up grassroots politics. Drop the civil rights cargo cults and the protesting nonsense. Drop the niceties of attempting to actually be a politically viable organisation.
Yeah, especially nationally.
Fight for our survival or don't bother.
Well, it's just, as a Westminster party, the best, the absolute wildest dream best.
Still not actually registered as a party on the commission yet. It's only applied for it. So all these people who are members in this 100,000 are from all over the world, and not one of them, I believe, has an official membership number or card.
Well, the best that Rupert Lowe could hope for in his wildest dreams is to become Nigel Farage's Nick Clegg.
Mm.
I mean, realistically, that's Restore taking like 10, 15% of the vote and actually having some MPs, and then Nigel Farage needing them for a coalition. You'd have to have the stars align for Rupert Lowe to even be Nigel Farage's Nick Clegg.
Mm.
And even then, all that would happen to him is what happened to Nick Clegg, and he would be richly humiliated. As would his supporters by the larger party, who must make concessions in government to be politically viable, as the establishment parties, supposedly in opposition, vote with the government against him over and over for projects that they want, even though they aren't quote-unquote in power. This is this... imagine if 10 years time, God, Rupert will be fucking dead by then, but 10 years time, you know, Restore goes on to become a viable electoral force, and all it manages to do is be the Nick Clegg of neo-right-wing politics. Why are you engaging in an electoral project? Why? What's wrong with you? Have you... Again, all of this has been derailed by another war in the Middle East. The grooming gang's land that you built on has shifted, and the answer to the grooming gangs has become, we need to blow up Muslims in the Middle East. Mm. You're angry at the grooming gangs, therefore let's blow up Muslims in the Middle East.
What we need is another £100 million therapeutic operation to further westernize Muslims that are already here. For some reason. I mean, the last and final point, we don't have to focus on it too much. But it's a method.
It's this endless conversation here of equivocating, of trying to have an intellectual debate with Tommy Robinson, who is a Mossad coke addict.
Yes.
He is a repulsive foreign lobbyist. He is disgusting. And you should really go, ew, get away from me, you Zionist piece of shit.
How can Law not... Or, I'm sorry, put himself in a position...
Pete
North has been writing his fucking tweets, I'll tell you that. How does he put himself in a position where Tommy Robinson can turn round and go, yes, but what about my mixed race mate that helps us organise and film protests? Is he part of the movement? And Rupert Lowe, of course, as he replies underneath, goes, of course, he works directly for us. He's such a talented young man, blah, blah, blah. He can stay. I don't even care really what you give a shit about when it comes to mixed race people and whether or not you think they're nationals. It's not even part of the conversation. What is fundamentally needing to be discussed here is the fact that Tommy Robinson and the interests he represents have just been used to humiliate Rupert Lowe in front of his own audience on Twitter.
Do not treat any members of the big tent as if they are worthy of your attention. You must go, we are not in your tent, leave. I will not talk to you. You are disgusting. Your politics are revolting, and they're the politics of endless decline and death. And that is what Tommy Robinson's politics are. They are the politics of endless decline and endless death. He is more ghoulish than many of them. He is a parody of what Western politics is currently.
Mm.
And most people treat him, again, with absolute revulsion, as they should do. But here we see what is supposedly an insurgent political movement, and a lot of you are getting involved in this, having a discussion with this person as if he's legitimate, and conceding ground.
Yes. I mean, this is the thing. It doesn't matter what ground he's conceding to Tommy Robinson. You can't be conceding ground to Tommy in the interests he represents.
Well, what about my friendly brown people? It's exactly the same haggling the left does.
Mm. Like, yeah, so I can see there's already people in the comments. What about David Carton or Ben Habib? Do you know what? It doesn't fucking matter. What matters is the fact that as an attempt to run this as a political project without the outside influences that people like us don't want, and this is what we've been told it's going to be, it is not showing itself as being capable of doing such.
Yeah.
And until it does, it's going to be another... embarrassment.
Ben Habib's another great example. His Great British Pack, all the people involved in that.
Oh, yeah, what was the guy from the Great British Pack the other day when the woman from Gorton and Denton was elected, and he went on to say something to the fact that, well, if British natives can't get up and vote, then they deserve to be replaced with Muslims.
Yeah.
I mean, well, we're going to get replaced by fucking anyone and everyone anyway, so it doesn't matter who it is. But this point of like, oh, you've got to be engaged, you've got to be into the politics. I mean, this is part of the thing that's always disturbed me about Restore. Look at the website when it first started up. Look at the people behind building it as a Democracy 3 style grassroots platform. It doesn't work. We know all this stuff's garbage. So why are we once again supporting another organisation that turns around and goes, it's grassroots, we've got to come from the bottom up, everyone has to play their part. I mean, they've stipulated that one of their primary sort of interests is to get people who have never voted before at the voting booth. I don't want that. I think apathy is more powerful than fucking engagement.
Look at the big tent in all of its glory. Look, you've got Ben Habib being retweeted by Tommy Robinson. You've got Tommy Robinson out there, quote tweeting Nigel Farage and all this stuff. And no, oh, what's this? It's Great British Bad. Let's put that away before we get in trouble. It's all so tiresome.
Yes. I think there might be a chat or two to check there before we pop off.
Don't worry, we're not gonna pop off yet. We have a little bit more fun funding. Do you want to read these?
Yes, is that Louise Shaw? Yes. Really glad I'm leaving the Twitter. The spring equinox has been fun, but by the Cthonian Titans, I really wasn't missing anything. Here's more booze money. Thank you.
Thank you for the booze money.
It's as we've been turning around and saying repeatedly. I suppose I'll do it just now, though, whilst there's a lot of people listening.
Yes.
If you want to know how we've actually come to this view of the world and politics itself, please consider picking up a copy of our book. It will help actually make sense of a lot more of this stuff. Doubly so if you then go and kill your Twitter account after reading it.
Anyway, that is the utility of burning down the big tent. You guys have a good evening. We will see you later.
Next Goodbye. Time. Yes. Whenever the next time.
Never black-pilled. Never late.
Never again.
Never again, yes.